This is Bloomberg Business of Sports.
The world's changing, and what are things we can do to transform our business and engage our fans globally in different ways?
People are using their name and likeness to create more opportunities, more stakes in companies.
In order to turn the organization around, we had to turn it around not only just on the baseball operations side, but on the business operations side.
Football and any other sport is very difficult, but I like to broaden my horizons and be able to expand.
Sports need to be consumed live, and that's a big competitive advantage for intellectual property holders of sports content in the media landscape.
Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio.
Hello, I'm Michael Barr.
And I'm Mike Lynch.
And I'm Scarlett Fu.
And this is the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast, and we're talking about some of the biggest issues in the sports industry. And we have a lot to talk about, so I don't know where to begin. So let's start, Kyrie Irving. I want to start with him. And
he has a bit of a reputation, doesn't he?
Yeah. He was the one that said that the earth is flat.
Okay, that's a reputation.
Yeah. And now, he's an anti-vaxxer, and he's pushing that around the league, and it's gaining traction. Lynchy, Kyrie Irving was with the Celtics for about a year, wasn't he?
He's a contrarian. If you said, boy, it's a sunny day today, he said, no, it looks like it's raining to me. And that's just his nature. The bigger problem here is that a number of cities have mandated. Now, New York is one of them. They house Madison Square Garden for the Knicks and the Barclays Center for his team, the Brooklyn Nets. San Francisco's Chase Center, which houses the Warriors. And now the Boston Garden has come on board and saying all players, anybody that enters the building must be vaccinated. So there's going to come to a head right here. Some players have threatened to miss home games because they just don't want to get vaccinated.
So they will be gone for half the season.
At 41 games. 41 games if they stand up to it. Absolutely. So there's going to be a big problem here. However, you can dodge it if you have religious issues. And, of course, that goes all the way back to Muhammad Ali and refusing induction into the United States Army because of religious conviction. So I think we're headed to court here unless there's some type of resolution.
And it's not just him, obviously, because there are 50 to 60 NBA players who have yet to receive a single vaccine dose, according to some reports. So there's a lot of people who are kind of using Kyrie as a case study.
There's one person we haven't heard from also who's a big, big name in the NBA is LeBron James. He has not mentioned if he has taken the vaccine or not.
I don't understand what the problem is. Now, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar came out, and of course, he is a Muslim, and he said he went on camera with Arnold Schwarzenegger and got his vaccination right away. And he just said, you know, people who are opposed to science here, if their child was sick, they take them right to a doctor. What can I do, doctor? Can I get some medicine? Can I get some penicillin, amoxicillin to help my child right here? Yet when it comes to vaccination for themselves, they're refusing to do so. And he doesn't
understand.
Very
different generation, though. And I suppose if you're an NBA player who hasn't gotten vaccinated, you can look at what happened with the bubble format that they did last year and say, you know, it worked. Was it perfect? No, but it did work. Just a point of contrast here, the NHL, apparently 98% of the players are vaccinated. So just different winter sport, in some cases, similar arenas, right? MSG for both the Rangers and the Knicks. You have a higher level of compliance there.
And this isn't just like Kyrie. Oh, Kyrie, come on now. No, Irving serves as vice president on the executive committee of the
Good
Players
point.
Union.
Yeah.
Yes.
So this brings up many issues, and he can push this now to the union. Is like, hey, why do we have to get vaccinated? Now, I'm not getting into, you know, the argument of should you get vaccinated or shouldn't get vaccinated. That, you know, that's what you want, you know, whatever. But I am saying is that how much of a disruption could this be for the upcoming season?
Well, if the players don't play in home games, that's a massive disruption.
Yeah. Sure it is. They report the camp next week. The first game, I think, is October 19th. So this is coming down the track very, very quickly. You know, standing from the outside looking in, if every fan in the arena has to be vaccinated and show proof of it, and everybody on the sideline, coaches, assistant coaches, concessionaires, ushers, security people, you name it, the people that drive the Zamboni have to be vaccinated, why shouldn't the players have to
Why
be
are they any
compliant?
Different?
Yes.
Tampa Bay Rays, they're going to display the Montreal sign during playoffs. And Call it a custody, shared custody moment. And this is interesting in many ways because this could split the future of home schedules between the two cities, ladies and gentlemen.
Lady and
gentlemen.
I don't like it. I don't like it. It can't happen until 2028, but apparently there's a sort of a gentleman's agreement that the Tampa Bay Rays will, in that 2028 season, will start spring training in Tampa, open the season in Tampa, and then play the rest of the year in Montreal. And should they make the playoffs, they would split between Tampa and Montreal. I mean, who are we? What team are we? Montreal? Are we Tampa Bay? What about families? Okay, I've got my children in school. Do I move them out and from Tampa up to Montreal? Oops, I got to move them back to Tampa right now. Taxes. There's all kinds of issues here. I don't like it. It's not like
international taxes, no less too.
No kidding. And you know, for years and years and years, when teams were trying to build a regional fan base, like the Boston Celtics, even during the Larry Bird era, played 5 home games every year in Hartford, Connecticut, to try to build up a New England fan base. But, you know, that was like a 2-hour bus ride. This is Montreal and Tampa. This is a long plane ride.
It's not necessarily the two cities that I would lump together as makes a lot of sense. But, I mean, Montreal baseball fans are kind of desperate for some baseball, right? I mean, they have seen, I think, half a dozen games played in Montreal since the Expos left the city. And each time those preseason games have drawn about 100,000 fans to Olympic Stadium. So there's definitely a market there, and that's who benefits, right? The businessmen and women who are looking at this as an opportunity. Personally, I wonder how much of this is a ploy to put pressure on, you know, create some leverage for local governments to maybe pony up more cash for a new ballpark. You know, you've seen this happen before in other sports with other teams in other cities.
Bingo, Scarlett. You know, I've been to this Tropicana Field in Tampa a number of times.
And
you have to drive from Tampa along this very, you know, causeway, which, you know, during daylight hours, you know, it's fine. But nighttime, it can be a little bit perilous, you know, a little bit intimidating. So a lot of the people, especially the elderly, aren't going to get in their car and drive a car around this long causeway out to St. Petersburg to watch baseball games. They only average 9,370 people per game. The answer is to build a stadium down close to the Raymond James Stadium where the Buccaneers play. There's also a great arena downtown where the Tampa Bay Lightning play. This is a hotbed right now. All teams are winning championships or appearing in World Series. I agree with you, Scarlett. I think it's a little bit of a strong-arm play to get a stadium built in Tampa and take it out of St. Petersburg.
Yeah, the answer seems to always be build a new stadium, doesn't it, Michael Barr?
Yeah, and old man Barr has a stupid question. Why not just simply, if we're going to do, let's expand the major league teams. If you want to do that, go ahead. Why not bring back Montreal?
Yeah, but the problem I have is that Major League Baseball took over ownership of the Expos in 2004 because they were not financially solvent and they were not attracting fans, and they moved them to Washington. The Montreal Expos are now the Washington Nationals. So if it failed once, why are we going to go back and do it again with Major League Baseball? We've already got one team in Canada that had a huge problem this year because they couldn't play any home games because of COVID.
Let's move on to the Ryder Cup. Charlie, extraordinaire engineer and producer, and the U.S. won the Ryder Cup, and he said, hey, did you see the clip of the golfers drinking beer? I'm like, what? What are you talking about? Were they at the bar?
Is that
afterwards?
Not done?
Oh, well, if you haven't seen this video, apparently, let me set it up right quick. Kind of what happened here. The U.S., as you know, they won, and they had a sizable lead. And as they're on the course, now we really haven't gotten into heated competition yet. All of a sudden, some people in the gallery throw the golfers, and they weren't really going to play. These weren't the golfers that were going to play. But they threw them beers.
Right.
And so the golfers said, you know what? That looks tasty. And they cracked open, and they chugged the beer. Now, the crowd loved it. And then, of course, you know, the crowd started chanting USA, USA. My question is it, let me put it this way. Was it tasteful? Not, I'm not talking about the beer. I'm talking
if you want
about
to capture the younger generation, then it certainly was very effective. How about that?
It worked.
It can go viral. I mean, our producer, Charlie, just said, you know, so that I can understand whether this is normal or not in the land of golf, it's as if the Rangers came back after the second intermission at the beginning of the third period and were warming up, and some fans tossed the fourth liners a can of beer, and they decide to open it up and start chugging it before the game resumed. You know, is that normal? Maybe in hockey it's a little bit more normal. I'm guessing in golf it's not.
Well, these two players, Daniel Berger and Justin Thomas, were not playing in the afternoon session. They came out and they actually started throwing beers into the crowd. The crowd threw a couple of them back to them. So they said, you know what, we're going to be good sports, we're going to participate. And they just, one of them, I think Thomas got down on one knee and just fired a beer. Daniel Berger did the same. And like Rob Gronkowski, they spiked the beer right on the tee. And the place just went absolutely crazy.
Do we know what kind of beer this is? Was this part of any kind of marketing ploy or sponsorship opportunity?
I don't think the fans and the guys were that clever. I think they just, whatever.
Well, someone's going to come in here, some marketing person's going to come in here and be like, let's redo this, you know, for the next big golf tournament and make sure that our name is plastered all over the backdrop.
You know who's drinking beers? Now I got to bring it up. I'm sorry. The Detroit Lions. You know why the Detroit Lions?
Oh, your Detroit Lions bar.
Oh, my goodness gracious. I'm watching this game. They're playing the Ravens. Lions have the lead. This is the last play of the game for the Ravens. And Justin Tucker comes out, and he's going to kick a 66-yard field goal, according to the attempt. And I'm thinking, you know, this is like, you know, Tom Dempsey's rolling over in his grave. He's not going to make that. And as I'm saying it, it goes and it hits the crossbar. And I'm thinking, oh, it was close. It hit the crossbar. But, of course, because we're the Detroit Lions, plink, it went over. And that was the 1917 win for the Baltimore Ravens. I've seen the Lions lose a lot of games, but this one was special. I couldn't believe it.
Did you put any money on this one, Barr?
Oh, heck yeah. I'm sorry.
But on this part of the game.
Well, no. I mean, what I put on was that the Lions were going to win the game outright. And I had it. I had it going. I said, there's no way in the world he's going to kick this thing. And Justin Tucker, well, hey, you did.
And get this, Michael Barr. When Tom Dempsey kicked his then-record 63-yard field goal with a club foot, he had half a foot, half a right foot.
1970 against the
November
Saints.
8th, 1970, against your Detroit
That's
Lions.
Right. We've seen this movie before.
Why are the Detroit Lions always involved in this?
Because a cold wind blows on us. The football gods do not like us. I've seen so many games. I've seen the final play where Aaron Rodgers throws a catch. All the Lions are there except one Packer. And that one Packer catches the football and wins the This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast. We're here every day for you on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. You can catch that wherever you get your Apple podcast. I'm Michael Barr. You can follow me crying on Twitter at Big Barr Sports.
You know what? If you follow him on Wednesday, he won't be crying because he'll have had a couple of days to recover from the NFL weekend. I'm Scarlett Fu at Scarlett Fu.
And I'm Mike Lynch. Wishing nothing but sunshine and fair winds for the good people in the city of Detroit. You can follow me at Lynchy WCBB.
I'm going to spike a beer too, just like Grunt. By the way, I think I told you this, but I'm going to tell you again. You can catch this anywhere, our podcast, either from your Apple podcast or wherever you get your podcast.